This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Wednesday, as we welcome you into Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network, alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni with you, producer Justin Emery at the controls. Got a loaded 2 hours on deck and plenty of Major League Baseball in action right now. Five or six games already going as we sit here in the morning. The Phillies up 6-3 on the Marlins right now. Diamondbacks with a 3-0 lead in the bottom of six over the Pirates. We're still scoreless in Blue Jays, Nationals, and Braves, Mets. But how about the Detroit Tigers, who are up 3-0 right now in the bottom of the fourth against the Baltimore Orioles? They won yesterday in just an absolute crushing performance over Baltimore, but today being potentially Tarek Skubal's final start as a Tiger, I mean, this is what they wanted, right? Keep winning, see if they can hang on to him. Who knows?
Yeah, that's the problem is, can they actually do it? They had lost, what, three straight prior to yesterday's beatdown of the Baltimore Orioles. The weekend did not really go particularly well for them. And so now you wonder, because look, a three-game winning streak or a four-game losing streak can make all the difference for you right before the trade deadline and whether or not you're going to decide to deal, especially when you're an organization like the Tigers who have a piece like Skubal and might be getting some pretty nifty offers from teams like the Dodgers and others. And so this is pretty big for him. But got four strikeouts so far today. He has been dealing and at the very least showing out for potential suitors. As we know, he doesn't really need to, but could be. And I would think I'm kind of more in the line of this should be the last start. I mean, are you really going to carve your way out of this hole? Potentially not. You know, you're not like the Red Sox, right? The Red Sox at the very least have done the legwork to get back into contention. We're still waiting for you to do that, and you would be foolish to potentially lose him for nothing. I can say that as somebody who rooted for the Angels and watched Shohei Ohtani leave for absolutely nothing.
Speaking of the Angels, tough one again yesterday. But manager A.J. Hinch did say yesterday prior to the 14-0 win over Baltimore, quote, "We're trying to win a series so that puts us in better position to be a playoff team. The information I have is to win the series. We have to win in order to put us in that position," referencing to keep Skubal, of course, who's given up two runs or fewer in his last five starts entering today. So we'll see what this looks like. August 3rd, we'll be here before you know it. We're only 5 days out from that trade deadline being here. Because you mentioned the Red Sox, though, rough news for them on Curtis Meade, who they just go out and trade for. We were talking about it yesterday, actually, to a VSiN fan up at the coffee shop here at Jackbox, who was talking about the Red Sox and the surge that they've been on. They make the trade for another bat in the lineup. They're like, but I told him he got hurt, but we think it's just a contusion right now. We find out later, a day later from the MRI, that it's actually a fracture in that wrist and awaiting additional testing today to see if he's going to need surgery. He could be done for a really long time.
Yeah, but you can't let that deter you if you're Boston. You need bats. We've been hitting on this, right? If you dug under a little bit of the surface for this Red Sox winning streak that they had been on, one of the things that stuck out was some pretty average offensive numbers. They'd really been carried by their pitching. Don't squander this at all. The pitching is good enough, I would say, to win the American League. Like, screw just getting in there. You just got to go get some more offense. The one time you tried, he gets injured. Who cares? Go get some
second
more. Keep buying.
Bat. That's just crazy.
Absolutely brutal. But I don't think this would deter you at all. Keep going. Keep buying. You need this year if you're Boston. So you do wonder if they're still going to be pretty active even after the bad luck.
Speaking of bad luck, after you did your rousing speech at the end of the show yesterday on how much you hate Seattle, how much did it hurt that they won yesterday?
Not at all. They still stink. Okay. I know that, you know, it's funny. I was watching that game yesterday and we actually even put up on Instagram my rant on Instagram at VSiN Live about the Seattle Mariners. Nothing changes about this Seattle Mariners team. In fact, I would prove that I am even more right than I ever have been about this team. But Canzoni comes in, I mean, hits two home runs yesterday. Absolutely fantastic performance from a power standpoint. Cal Raleigh gets involved as well.
Yeah, finally.
They almost blew it, though. If you watch in the ninth inning, I think it was two on, both in scoring position with no outs, and you still barely get out of that thing. So almost blew it, did not. But my point still stands. This is one of the worst offenses in Major League Baseball over the last 2 months. That has to be better. And maybe they're going to be buyers yet again at this trade deadline.
Dodgers were, by the way, the most bet team on the board yesterday and the largest favorites, closed -231. But bets, tickets, money, all of that, all over the Dodgers. They end up ultimately losing that one 7-6. Speaking of your rant on social media, though, I love that you responded to this guy, because the comment on the video that VSiN posted to their Instagram was, he absolutely lost it over the Mariners. And, you know, listening to everything you said, T_22 says they're kind of like the Colts, huh?
Yeah.
You responded that. You said, shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth, yeah. Okay. Which I do wonder if he knows who I am or if that was just a coincidence that he said the Colts.
He has to know.
If he's like, who's this guy telling me to shut my mouth?
let's set the table, though, for everything else we have to come today on Money Moves. Time to run it down.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
All right, like I said, JVT, we've got a stacked 2 hours, including a couple of great guests, Kelly Bidlin and Ed Simia joining us today. Kelly going to join us in studio in about 10 minutes, talk Rocket Classic that gets underway tomorrow at the Detroit Golf Club. It is a new-look course this year out there in the Motor City, so discuss how that might impact things. And then with Ed, talking all things WNBA. Yesterday, the post-All-Star slate got underway with 5 games. We got 2 more today. He can give us a little perspective, not only with plays on the 2-game card, but some futures as well.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing from Kelly. You mentioned the change in the course. It's also a relatively good field. You got 4 of the top 10 in the world ranking participating here, too. So should be a fun and entertaining golf tournament as we inch closer to the FedEx Cup playoff.
Cameron Young, your favorite at plus 970 over on DraftKings, where things sit right now. We're also continuing the countdown to college football season. We are officially inside the top 5 for our Money Moves College Football Top 25 today. A pair of SEC teams to dive into, plus plenty of items to unpack from Big Ten Media Days in Chicago so far as well. One team, JVT, I think might be able to double their win total this year.
Of the 2 that we talked about, or there were 2 in our rankings?
Of the 2 that we're talking about today in the Big Ten.
Oh, the Big Ten. I was like, wait a minute, how is that going to work?
No, from the Big Ten.
Right. Yes, all right. Yes, I can't wait to hear what that is. I was going to be like, Stormy,
if 2 top 5
I've got some bad news for you. They think statistically that's impossible. And I'll say amongst the 2 teams that we have today in our top 25 rankings, I think there's a stone-cold lead pipe lock century of the pick of the week when it comes to Heisman that you should bet.
Beautiful. All for it. But we're going to start things in the National Football League camp. I say not so confidential because I feel like the camp confidential is all the things that you see around teams coming in this year. But I mean, we find out everything that we need to. And we've got a lot of news items to unpack today, including a team I know you are very high on in the NFC South. We have already covered this team in our NFL training camp tour so far. You have been high on what the Atlanta Falcons could look like with Tua Tagovailoa this year. We get the news this morning that neither Tua nor Michael Penix are going to be available for team drills to start camp. Kevin Stefanski said Tua has a minor injury that flared up, reportedly a tight back, and Michael Penix just not in position quite yet coming back from the knee. So a bad day or a bad sign for how you view Atlanta?
I mean, obviously, I would hope it's a bad day, but with 2 quarterbacks that have some injury concerns in their careers, but if you want to go back to college and then, of course, what we know about Tua, although the Tua, the back has not really been the problem. Obviously, we know it's been the concussion. So I'm just going to say it's a bad day, but it's funny. You know, you see the news like the Falcons, don't worry. The savior is coming. They have signed Cooper Rush. And you're like, oh, boy, it's not really great.
They when cut Trevor Siemian, by the way, to sign Cooper Rush. So those are your options.
It's not a great start, but it's also not a great start because, you know, you're breaking in a new system. One of the quarterbacks hasn't been there. The other has been there, but it's still Stefanski is coming in as a head coach with his new offense that you're not familiar with. You never really like that right at the start of camp. You still have plenty of time to get these guys in there. You can obviously do the whole mental rep thing and get used to the playbook and all that sort of stuff. But as somebody who thinks that Tua Tagovailoa can be one of these dark horse MVPs, can lead this team to some heights that maybe the market does not expect, I do think that there is there's a cause for concern here, just given the fact that both of them, I mean, I do think there's a reality in which Penix maybe wins the job and they still achieve everything I think they can, because I'm that much of a believer in Stefanski. But yeah, I need them both to be healthy. And I will tell you this right now, shockingly enough, they're not going to be able to do what I think they can with Cooper Rush.
Yeah, and by the way, it was undrafted free agent out of D2 Minnesota State Moorhead, Jack Strand, taking first-team reps today while they wait
for the
Cooper Rush to make his trip over there. The back issue thing, though, does at least concern me slightly. And granted, listen, we know what was the story all off season last year, Matthew Stafford and his back issue, and how is this going to impact him when he gets to the season? Well, obviously he was just fine and ends up winning an MVP. I'm not saying that's going to be what Tua does, but back issues are something that typically really, really do concern me. And we talked about it a lot last off season. It worked out for Matthew Stafford. Will it for Tua? Is it as minor as they're making it seem? We certainly hope so, because I know this potential fit for Tua in this offense is something you like a lot with what he has around him. Last couple minutes, I do want to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles for a second, because good news and bad news for their defense. Good news, Jalen Carter agrees to a 4-year, $152 million extension. He is now the highest paid defensive tackle in NFL history. But then we also find out this morning that Eagles Pro Bowl linebacker, pass rusher Jonathan Greenard is going on the PUP list here to start out camp due to a pectoral injury he recently suffered. And that type of injury for a defensive player that does need to like use his arms and hands and stuff is always at least a slight concern. There's not a lot of pec injuries that I've heard of either that are minor.
Correct.
It is worth noting, though, this isn't he's going to start the season on PUP. Like, that hasn't been said, so he's not automatically going to miss the four games right now, but that is how they're opening camp, and he's a key piece of what the Eagles want to do to get back to being one of the best defenses in football.
Yeah, I guess the bright sign of this, or the bright side, I should say, is would you rather have all these injuries now, right, in July, yeah, and give them ample time to recover and maybe even a beginning portion of a season and have everybody healthy and ready to go for the back end of your schedule when everything's going to be most important. Obviously, you will feel their absences if they are going to be just that once your season begins. But if you had to pick and choose when these injuries are going to occur, you're going to pick this time of the year to make sure everybody's healthy. So I don't think you're running to the window to your app to cash out on any Eagles futures at this point, but obviously something worth monitoring. And we're getting these all over the place. We talked about that yesterday. Alec Pierce on the PUP list as well. So all these sort of things, you expect this at this time. It's July 29th. When it gets to August 29th, and we're still talking about these dudes being somewhat dinged up, injured, not available, then you start to really sweat.
The Philadelphia Eagles are a +115 favorite in the NFC East, followed by the Cowboys, +235. The Washington Commanders at +460 as well, who we're going to preview in detail a little bit later on in the show. Can they be a team that has a bounce back with Jaden Daniels healthy? Obviously, injuries certainly derailed their season a year ago. We do need to step aside for our first timeout of the day here on Money Moves, but stick around. When we come back, as we told you, Kelly Bidlin is going to stop by. We're going to talk through the Rocket Classic. So much more to come, though, over the course of the next couple hours here on Money Moves. It is a stacked day. A lot of football on a midweek Wednesday, but we are here for it. Don't go anywhere. More coming up on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, let me get your attention real quick, podcast listeners. I've got something for you that feels too good to be true. First, credit where credit is due. If you're listening to this podcast, you're already leveling up your betting game. You're riding along with our best bets and top angles. And when there's a good game on, you're probably getting involved with a few props and alt markets as well. But there's one more layer if you really want to step things up, and that's VSiN Pro. Yeah, I've mentioned it before, but things are only getting better for our pro subscribers. We just rolled out our MLB prop projections, breaking down some of the best edges across strikeouts, hits, home runs, and more. And that's on top of everything else pro subscribers already get, including public betting splits, expert picks, and betting guides across the sports calendar. If you haven't tried it yet, stop sleeping on it. You can get your first month for just $9.99 or save big with promo code POD26 on an annual subscription. Hit the link in the description and start cashing in with VSiN Pro. All right, now back to the show.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, which does remind me, the Circa Survivor documentary is back, ladies and gentlemen, bigger than ever, 18.7 mil on the line, and a look at the new Grandissimo. If you want to follow it all, episode 2 of the doc series airs tonight at 9 Eastern right here on VSiN. You can watch every agonizing moment of opening weekend, and there were many, plus early winners, losers, and storylines shaping the season. Plus, remember this, if you missed episode 1, it's on YouTube right now. Just search VSiN Live. You can find it easier than ever. Again, check out every new episode every Wednesday, 9 Eastern on VSiN. I have a feeling that our next guest is going to be in the Circa Survivor contest again this year as well. Kelly Bidlin joins us here in person.
Oh, yeah.
Producer of A Numbers Game, Long Shots Podcast, everything. And yeah, how many entries are we doing this year?
Three. What's the word? I'm going to roll back with 3.
Okay.
Yeah. I had extended out to, 5 or 6 2 years ago. I'm reeling it back in because the problem is you start... If you're not going to play them differently, there's not really any reason to have more. And I had gotten to a point where it was like, okay, 3 different paths. I usually just go my standard one and then real conservative, real aggressive is kind of how I play them usually. And when I got out to 5, I just realized I was doubling up on one of the paths every week. And you're just kind of, if you're not branching out more, I don't think it's worth doing more.
3. And then nothing in millions? Are you going to do millions as well?
Yeah, okay, millions. Okay. Always in on millions. Like to bang my head against that wall.
You got to have a season-long thing, too, especially if you get eliminated quick.
It's the greatest selling point on millions, and both these contests are awesome. You should definitely hop in and be a part of them. But millions, I probably wouldn't play it at all if it weren't for the quarterly payouts, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people say that, and it makes sense because we've all bet the NFL and we've all gone on 3, 4, 5 week super runs that are awesome. It's just the genius of the contest. Will it happen in that specific four?
It's the worst. It's the best and the worst all in one, right? Because I found at least last season I was like the queen of just the 3 and 2 weeks, right, which will never win you anything. But if you get on a run, you'll have 3 straight weeks of 4-1, 5-0, but it's half of a quarter instead of the beginning of a quarter. So it's always something like that. But
hey, drinking game tonight, JVT. Drink every time you see Stormy in the documentary, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, come on.
I do have to be at work tomorrow, though, so I'd rather not be that hungover.
let's shift gears here. Let's get away from me, shall we, and talk about you, because we have the Rocket Classic going on this week, and it was fun tuning into a numbers game earlier this morning, because with you and Matt hosting together, Matt Brown, it was like a Long Shots podcast light little bit, talking Rocket Classic. What can you tell us about the changes that are being done to the course of the Detroit Golf Club for this event?
Oh, my gosh, how much time do you have?
I know.
This is like JVT's line about, like, I got to be ready for something later. Well, it's really great because their complete renovation of the Rocket Classic, the Detroit Golf Club, if you're a member there, I know you are in the offseason, JVT, so it's really going to be some nice changes. $16 million worth of renovation. That's it. You know, it's just pretty light. Just completely overhauling this course. Par 72 was a par 72. Now it's par 70. Took a couple par fives, turned them into par fours. Rest of the golf course looks very different. And guess what? You know what's exciting if you're a golf handicapper like me? You dig in, you got to do all the research for what all the changes do. How do you have to statistically profile this course differently now? You got to figure all that out, and then you get one whole year to bet into it, because this will be off the PGA Tour next season.
Yay. Okay, awesome, fantastic. So you mentioned, there's the removal of the lake, there's no water hazards now, there's more bunkers. Does this make this easier to score, harder to score? There's only 2 par 5s, correct?
Correct. Well? Yeah. Got rid of 2 of the par fives. Also, you hit on something really important there we brought up on Long Shots. When exactly does a pond become a lake and a lake become a pond?
There's an actual answer.
I don't believe it, though. Yeah. Apparently, there's an answer of, if you can see the bottom, it's a pond.
Correct.
But, like, ponds are gross. How many ponds I've run into? You can't see the bottom. Anyways, yes, they did all that. You take out the par
fives. For sunlight to reach the bottom, yeah.
Yeah, sunlight to reach the bottom. Yeah. I didn't know. Now you know something. Okay, you learned something on my spot today.
What's the difference between a stream and a brook? It's awesome.
All right, let's go.
All right, so, JVT, you hit on the big question. I think even for us handicapping this event, we don't really know. This is a course that has played very easy in the past. It has been a bomb and gouge type place. You're looking for big drivers. The rough wasn't very penal off to the side. Just hit it down there. Go figure it out. If you look at past winners here, Aldrich Pottgeter last year, Cameron Davis has won here twice. Like, all that guy can do is drive. He's barely on the PGA Tour these days. Tony Finau won at this event. Bryson DeChambeau. So, big time hitters. I think that is still going to apply this week. If you are doing your own stat modeling at home, I think driving distance is important. I think relative just success off the tee is going to be important this week. It's going to be trickier. There are heavy bunkers in the fairway now. These guys are going to have to work their way around. I don't know how penalized these guys are going to get from missing the fairway, though. That hasn't been a problem in the past. I don't think it's going to be that much more of a problem this time around. Big questions are, like, the par 5, par 4 thing's easy, right? Okay, you make a par 5, which was a birdie hole, into a par 4, guess what? It becomes a bogey hole now. So you kind of see where that's going to get tougher. I think there's a lot of questions for the rest of us is, how is the rest of the course going to play? Is it still going to be easy that it kind of makes up for that? Or is it going to be tricky throughout? A lot of that, we're not going to really know until they start playing.
So Cameron Young is your favorite around +980 right now on DraftKings. Xander Schauffele second on the board as we get up to the double digit, 16-1. Chris Goddard up 18-1. Siwoo Kim +1850. And we go on and on. Mm-hmm. You talk about a course that goes low. Jackson Koivun went pretty low at the 3M Open last week, the 21-year-old phenom early in his career. Where are you looking in terms of the outright market?
Yeah, he sure did. He's looking good. The odds got too short for me last week on him. I can't recommend him here at 23-1 either. I think we're getting a little bit over our skis, but man, he did just go look very, very impressive last week. I do like these fields. I hate that we have question marks about the course, because the field's fun, right? You got no Scheffler, no Rory's, but you got some of the other big guys playing it. Cameron Young, Xander, Goddard up. I like it makes it a fun odds board, at least, to bet into. So No shocker, if you've been listening to Long Shots or following any of my golf content, when I saw Chris Goddard wasn't shorter than Xander Schauffele, that was like an immediate bet.
Goddard up on the card? Got to get him on there.
Yeah, something like that. I started with Goddard, especially if driving distance is going to prove to be important again this week. I think that was kind of a no-brainer. Schauffele's great. With all due respect to Xander Schauffele, this is not exactly his season. Chris Goddard's only won three times already. I was a little surprised consensus he wasn't shorter than Schauffele everywhere. There are some shops that you will see that. But started with Goddard, who, again, good over in Great Britain. Scottish Open, good finish. Over in the Open Championship, a good finish as well. He has played this course three times, T26 last year. So a little bit of familiarity here as well. I think Goddard's game sets up well. The other two that I played, bit of number plays here. I'm not usually a big Ben Griffin guy. Great putter, great around the green. He's just not a big-time ball striker, and those are usually the guys I'm looking for, JVT. Good on approach, though, recently. Really, the past 6 weeks has gained on approach, so he's got the irons locked in around the green game and the putter working out. Well, actually, putter's been dipping a little bit, but he's one of the better putters on the PGA Tour. So I think that's going to come into handy this week. He's got quality finishes here before in the past, T13, T31, and T33 over the last three starts for Ben Griffin. So I like his game rolling in this week. You'll find him about 29-1, so close to 30-1, I think is a pretty good price on him. And then Hideki Matsuyama, I was eyeing him last week, didn't end up betting him, surged on Sunday to finish a T3, might be a little bit of a fake result, but when you look at the three finishes in a row, T3, T14, T14, he's gained off the tee, around the green, and with the putter in three straight events. He has not gained with the irons, which is a little odd. That's the strongest part of his game. So it's got me scratching my head a little bit. It's not been the best season for Decky. But in this field, at that price, I thought it was a good play on Decky this week. So 33-1-ish, you'll find him around. I played him there and a top 10 as well with Hideki. Top 10 on Goddard and then rounded out with a top 20 on Ben Griffin.
Last 90 seconds, take this where you want. Two names that stuck out to me. One, I'm surprised you're not. I thought Jake Knapp was one of your guys. He's got some strong course numbers here. And Taylor Moore. He's like 125-1, has actually like a really strong and deep course history here. I was surprised.
He does. So some of this, Taylor Moore would be my 79th rated golfer this week. No interest in him. Some of these guys, you know, the course history, I think is a little bit tough this week because we're tearing up the course, right? Yeah. I think some of that's going to carry over. It's just, how do you quantify it, right? How much? So some of that I kind of tossed out. Really glad you brought up Jake Knapp. Love Jake Knapp this week. Was waiting for last week, right? I think a lot of us were. Show some of the glimpses that we saw at the beginning of the season when he had five straight top 10 finishes to start the season. Irons were locked in last week. He gained over 7 strokes on the field on approach. I was waiting for him and waiting to bet him, JVT. This number's too short, man. I was shocked this was this short. I really thought he had been drifted out into kind of the 50s, 60s, 70s as he's been battling back from this injury. 33 is where he's at DraftKings. 33-1. That's the longest I've seen. Most places you're finding him in the 20s. I just think he's tough to bet in the 20s. Just like Koivin.
Two things. I didn't realize you and Hideki Matsuyama were on such close terms that you call him Decky.
Yeah,
so that
pretty
was
tight.
Nice.
Pretty tight.
And Cameron Davis, you mentioned the 2-time winner, but barely on tour, 600-1. The odds on him.
Hey, he's won here twice. He's won here twice. I know the last time nobody expected him to either.
Kelly, great stuff as always. Thank you so much. And everybody, go make sure you check out Long Shots out now before you make any of your bets here on the Rocket Classic. We got to step aside when we come back, shifting gears back to college football. Day 2 of Big Ten Media Days from Chicago. We'll break it down next.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We were telling you last segment about the great contests we have for the NFL season coming up here at Circa. And with that in mind, if you haven't heard, Winner Circle Proxy and us at VSiN, we're giving away two incredible prize packages this year that will put two of you into the world's biggest football contest for free. One winner will get an entry into Circa Survivor, another an entry into Circa Million, the 5 picks ATS each and every week throughout the NFL season. Both winners will also get a full season of Winner Circle Proxy service, a VSiN studio tour, come hang out with us, and a free month of VSiN Pro. You do need to enter by next week, though. Sunday, August 2nd for your chance to win. WinnerCircleProxy.com/VSiN is how you can learn more and enter. Again, WinnerCircleProxy.com/VSIN. Story Von Tony and Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here at Circa Resort and Casino. Money moves, and we want to get into a little bit of college football talk here as Big Ten Media Days rolls on from Chicago. It's day two, but we pulled a lot of sound from coaches and players yesterday on the podium. One of my best bets in the college football betting guide last year was the Wisconsin Badgers under 5.5 wins. They had the hardest schedule in the country last year. That was a no sweat winner, ended up finishing the season 4-8. It was the program's worst record since 1990. They are trying to take a next step or get back to where they were. Honestly, Luke Fickle's first season, this team has gotten worse, not better, in the Luke Fickle era, but he seems to believe that they are taking steps in the right direction to turn it around. Take a listen.
About 9 months ago, midway through a season, there were some things that started to happen, and we could have gone one direction or the other, and we were in a really tough situation. But there was some youth within our program that really kind of really started to grow and took over in a way that was really, really healthy for us. And we had a group of veteran leaders that kind of understood what was happening and saw it and embraced that as well. And it's really over the last 9 months put us in a position that is far, far different than we ever have been since I've been here.
Okay, so I know I have a lot of feelings about Wisconsin. When you first heard Fickle's comments and kind of looked at what this team is going into 2026, what stood out to you?
It's just the bad luck they've had at quarterback, really. Oh. There's like a ton of injuries. Almost every single one of these guys, there has been no consistency whatsoever at the position. So you almost can't blame him for the failings of this offense, which have been anemic for almost the entirety of his tenure there. So that, I think, is going to be the big thing. Like, will they finally be healthy at the quarterback position? Colton Joseph, Old Dominion, if I remember correctly, yep, comes in and hopefully will be able to stay healthy so we can find out if he's going to be a stud at the Big Ten level. Because like you've mentioned with your comment there, the numbers for him and what you saw, you know, sub 60% completion, but so much else that he provides in terms of what he can do as a thrower of the football, but also the ability to run and give you some athleticism at the position as well. Ran for over 1,000 yards last season. So if you could be healthy at quarterback, the defense, and I think that's what Fickle's alluding to there, if you look down the stretch of the season, the defense really came around pretty well for Wisconsin. Ended up finishing against the run as one of the better defenses in the country. We're a top 15 unit in some statistical categories against the run. So if you could replicate that and just get healthy at quarterback, you can kind of understand that despite all of the failings, why there is some positivity that you share with a lot of people around the program.
Yeah, to your point about the defense down the stretch, they beat Washington and Illinois, hung around with Indiana even for a while. That first half played really well. But even if your defense was the best in the country, if your offense is averaging like 13 points per game, you're not going to do much. So that is the question, is what will Colton Joseph be? And I am one of the Colton Joseph believers. I'm a truther, whatever you want to call it. He and new Auburn quarterback Byron Brown are the only players in the country last year that threw for more than 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns and ran for more than 1,000 yards and had 10 on the ground. Mm-hmm. He is a very dynamic guy. You said it. He needs to be more accurate. But if he stays healthy, because this is a team, to your earlier point, that had four different guys start games for them last year, and it started seeing their week one starter get injured on, I think it was like the opening drive of the game or something. But it just derailed everything, and they are thanking UMass for actually having the worst passing offense in the country. Otherwise, it would have been them. But I look at this schedule, and I think if their defense continues on that trajectory, if Fickle is right, and if the offense can just get moderately good and consistent quarterback play, they go from the hardest schedule in the country a year ago, JBT, to the easiest strength of schedule in the Big Ten. Their win total is 6.5. No Oregon, no Ohio State, no Indiana, no Washington, no Michigan on this schedule. They open the season, yes, with Notre Dame at Lambeau Field. Their other non-con games, Western Illinois and Eastern Michigan. Yeah. They host USC, go to Penn State in week four, but their next toughest road game is at Iowa. They play just two of the Big Ten's top 9 teams in the latest media poll we saw come out Monday. I think this could go from a 4-win team to an 8-win team. I like the over 6.5 here if there was anything to play on them.
I think I would agree with all those points. I think it makes a ton of sense, and it did just hit me that Colton Joseph is one of the very few that had a 7-0 lead over Indiana, right? He's the one that ripped off the big run against the Hoosiers at the beginning of the year.
So that's a good point. If you didn't watch a whole lot of Sun Belt football, you might have at least seen him in that game against Indiana. He threw 3 picks in the game, but he also ran for 2 touchdowns and 179 yards on the ground. no other team in the country that year ran for that many yards against them.
Yeah, we were talking about that at the end of the year. Like, yes. That was the only time they had given up over 100 yards like that. So Joseph has at least one thing, you know, Indiana shaking in their boots. But I would say I would agree with you. I think all your points are strong. The schedule's there. The upside's there. And I still think, too, I don't know how you feel about this, because the results haven't been there, but largely because of things that are out of his control. I still think the fickle that got Cincinnati to the CFP when there was only four teams at the table is still there, and that he could be a pretty good coach.
I mean, his contract goes through 2031, so
it's crazy. I didn't realize that.
After Rutgers put together back-to-back winning seasons, 2023-24, Greg Schiano's squad backslid last year, 5-7. The heart of the problem was their defense. Gave up nearly 32 points per game, tied for second most in the Big Ten, roughly 433 yards per game allowed, which was the worst in the conference. Schiano was on the podium yesterday. He expressed, though, how pleased he is with some of the changes they're making on defense, and it starts with their staff. Most notably, new defensive coordinator Travis Johansson.
Yeah, it's going to be a little different. It's going to be a mix of a lot of things. I think Travis has a great understanding of what we need to do with the personnel that we have. That, to me, is coaching, right? Using the players, putting your players in the best position to make plays. And I think Travis is a really, really talented coach. And not only the X and O's, like I said earlier, the chemistry that he's building is special. I have two really fine coordinators in Kirk Shiraka and Travis Johansson. And our newly appointed special teams coordinator, Eddie Allen, is doing a tremendous job. So I'm excited, really excited about the course where we're headed.
Are you excited about the course?
I mean, you can only really go up, right? Especially when you're talking about them defensively. That's kind of the big deal here. Also, a quarterback battle, so you don't really know what's going to happen in the most important position on the field. I don't know if you can be excited, but new is exciting. So, yeah, I guess you kind of have to be. If you can get this offense to play at a pretty high level and you can creep this thing back up toward average on defense, you know, you mentioned schedule. Look at what Rutgers has in front of them, potentially. You've got games against UMass and Howard at home near the beginning of the year. At Boston College should be a winnable contest for you as well. So you could start the season 3-1, potentially. And then the rest of this schedule, you know, Maryland, Northwestern, Nebraska, Wisconsin, you should be able to steal a couple of these games and find your way back to, at the very least, bowl eligibility if you can make sure that this defense, the defensive backfield, the ability to rush the passer, that was a big one for them too last year, were really anemic when it came to applying pressure to opposing quarterbacks. And if that's going to be something they can get to bring to the table here, because if they can, this seems like a bowl could be in store for them.
Crew, let's skip this USC clip because we talked about them a lot yesterday and jump ahead to Illinois. I know the Brett Bielema clip about him talking about how the SEC is living in 2005 is the one that's gone viral. But for us, from a betting standpoint, I thought this was a lot more poignant, talking about the defensive struggles. Obviously, we know this team had a year ago and what it could look like this year under Bobby Houck.
This defensive scheme is uniquely different. It's a genesis of Rocky Long, who is a longtime defense coordinator, very successful, many different plays. When Bobby left UNLV, he went to San Diego State and learned it right from Coach Long, and then had installed it and built it into his Montana program. We played against it a couple years ago when we played Mississippi State in the bowl game. So there's a few teams that have run it, but it's very unique and different. And I think the biggest factor for me is I wanted to get a way that we could play a defense that players could come in and transfer into and play easily. In addition to build something a little bit unique, I think in the Big Ten play, to prepare for a unique offense or defensive scheme in a work week is really, really hard. When I got into the league, the defense we were running, there were about two or three teams that ran it. Last year at the end of the year, there were about 12, you could say 13 teams that ran a variation of our defense more than anything else. So we've become a really routine prep, and I want to have something a little bit more unique.
And no, JVT, I did not just play that because that was a Rocky Long and San Diego State reference. And what?
Former UNLV head coach.
Yes, yeah. But most recently
coming
over from the FCS level as a head coach. His defensive scheme. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more pre-snap movement, getting creative with where you're going to blitz from and disguising things. How do you think that could work for Illinois this year?
I mean, the track record of the 3-3-5 defense that they're talking about has pretty strong, and it has a lot of good success, excuse me, behind it at a lot of different programs. So one would think that if Bobby Houck's able to put it together in a certain way, way, then yeah, it should be successful. But here's the thing. I mean, like, I know what a 3-3-5 is, but executing it as a defensive coordinator is another thing. Think Houck's going to be able to get this done. Houck, of course, it really helps when you have a guy as a play caller that's been in the position of a head coach of multiple different stops. So that works too. A little bit more success at a lower level. So think just being able to teach, implement things like that, Houck should be able to get the job done. And I like the thought of it being unique. So even just preparation for Illinois' defense is going to be a little bit more challenging for other teams.
From a Vegas connection to the Las Vegas Raiders, when we return, Clint Kubiak gave some insight into the quarterback competition or lack thereof here in Vegas. We'll hit on that and more in the National Football League when we return on Money Moves.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM channel 158, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, any of our great terrestrial radio stations across the country. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel with you. And NFL training camps are going on all across the country right now. As of yesterday, all 32 teams have had veterans reporting. And I do just want to commiserate for a moment based on what I've seen on social media in the last 20, 30 minutes about my 49ers. The old substation ain't beating any of the rumors right now. Unfortunately, got the news that Ricky Pearsall is dealing with knee swelling related to the PCL injury that he suffered last year. The team says, quote, all options are being explored and that there is some concern. And two more injuries at practice today. Running back Jordan James suffered a rib fracture. He's going to miss some time. And safety Malik Mustafa has a hamstring strain. So,
well, the rib fracture is not
for me.
The rib fracture is not part of the electrical substation issue because I believe
know,
it just
made his bones brittle?
No, I think it just deteriorates your soft tissue, doesn't it?
I don't think it's real, regardless, right? Isn't that a...
I don't know. You were so woke. Wow. Jeez.
Ay. It makes me sad, though, what we're seeing right now, especially in what we know is such a competitive division. The Seahawks are your defending Super Bowl champs. The Rams are the shortest shot on the board right now to win it all. And San Francisco finally getting healthy. We saw the practice video of Nick Bosa the other day. Fred Warner coming back. It gets you excited, a little bit buzzed up. And then ultimately, that's how we sit.
I would never.
Let's get into the, we'll stay West Coast, but to the AFC West, where, you know, sometimes you leave a press conference in media and it's just a nothing burger. There's a lot of words, but nothing really said.
A lot of stupid questions.
That is very fair. And then sometimes your ears perk up. And that certainly happened yesterday, listening to Clint Kubiak speak. Our good friend of the Las Vegas Review Journal here in town, Adam Hill.
My good friend.
Asked a question to Kubiak if he views the quarterback room as a competition. Here's what he had to say.
You know, for every position, there's got to be competition, right? The best player has to play. And that's not just what I'm going to see. You guys are going to see it in the preseason games. You know, we as coaches, we're going to see who's the best guard is, okay, best quarterback across the board. There's battles everywhere on the roster. So it's important for me to be fair to the players is to put the best player out there. When we go out to practice tomorrow, Kirk Cousins is the starting quarterback. He's the guy. And he's going to get a ton of reps. And he deserves them because he's played really good football. But I want Fernando and I want Aiden to push him.
So how'd you unpack that?
Well, there's a couple of things. First off, that's exactly what we expected.
Sure.
I think Kirk Cousins was brought in to be the starting guy for very good reason. You know, it goes back to when we were in San Francisco for Radio Row, and I was out there for local radio, including Raider Nation Radio, and Kirk Cousins was walking around. We went and grabbed him, and first thought was, we're probably talking to the eventual starting quarterback for the Las Vegas Raiders, and that's exactly what is the case. This has been in the works for a very long time, and I think this team has said from the very beginning that they want Fernando Mendoza to sit behind Kirk Cousins. Now, whether that's the entire year, whatever it is, I don't know for a fact, but I can say that I think the thought is it would be a good season if Fernando Mendoza doesn't see the field other than maybe a meaningless week 18 game and 17th game of the season, because that means things went relatively well for Kirk Cousins in the position that he's in. I understand the thought process, right? It's like, hey, look, you want everybody to compete. Iron sharpens iron, if you want to use the cliche. So you understand what he is saying, but it leads me to one thought, to be honest with you. You know, we can talk about the conference odds and make the playoffs and the win total. And this is why I put this in the rundown. Fernando Mendoza is the second choice to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And I brought this up about a month and a half, 2 months ago after he was drafted to Mitch Moss on Pod to the Futures, which now you can get wherever you get. A new episode is out today. But why? Why is the answer for a guy who is not going to start the season, for a guy who won't see the field for quite a while, why in the world is he the second likeliest choice to win this award?
Well, in my opinion, why? Is because your starting quarterback that you do have is going to be 38 years old when he starts the season. He recently had an Achilles injury even when he was playing last year. Wasn't particularly good to the point where he takes a seat to the younger guy. And we saw Tyler Shuck just last year, despite only playing, what, 9 games or however many he played, finishing second in the voting for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
He finished third.
So I thought it was second.
I'll double check that one.
Yeah, it's second.
Go ahead, continue.
But like that's kind of my thought process is, if, let's say, Kirk Cousins gets hurt or is bad, and I know it's a really tough schedule for the Raiders, so it's not like there's several natural places where you just want to throw in your first round number one overall pick at quarterback. But if the situation calls for it, I think you're putting him in over Aiden O'Connell.
You're right. He finished second. He had 5 first place votes. Tedder McMillan ran away with it. He had 41. Travion Henderson, who I thought actually finished second, was the third place finisher with 111 points and 1 first place vote.
What I don't understand about Offensive Rookie of the Year is how Jeremiah Love is your favorite.
Well, so let me ask you this to focus on Mendoza though, really quickly. So you would bet plus 425 right now?
No, I don't want either of the two favorites my account.
That's my whole point. Whether or not
just asked me why.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But my whole point here is whether or not you can make the case that Mendoza could potentially win this thing, your whole premise still starts with he's not going to start the season.
Yeah.
So how he is the second likeliest choice right now, when there is still the reality that Kirk Cousins is the starting quarterback for the first 8-ish games, whatever you want to say, like that to me is what doesn't compute. Because in reality, if you're betting at plus 425 for a guy that we know is not playing to start the year, you're driving the car off the lot, to use that term, and your value is depreciating like that while everybody else is accumulating statistics, and you're going to be sitting on plus 425, plus 430, when eventually maybe 8-1, 9-1 becomes available on Fernando Mendoza because everybody else is accumulating statistics.
Exactly. If you want to buy in on Fernando Mendoza, you wait. That is the way that you do it. Because, again, quarterbacks do get the benefit of the doubt. And I know there's another quarterback in the Offensive Rookie of the Year market that you would like to discuss. But, I mean, look at the season that Puka Nacua had, the yardage record that stood for however many decades, right? And Brock Bowers, when he had the incredible season for a tight end, we still haven't seen a tight end win it. And why did those two players not win Rookie of the Year? Because Jaden Daniels and CJ Stroud exist. They're going to be given the benefit of the doubt in this. And so Tyler Shuck, Exhibit A, only playing 9 games and still finishing second in the voting, tells me that even if Fernando Mendoza didn't play an entire season, if he played well in the games he was out there, he could be live for the award. So don't bet it now. But like, if you do think there's potential he could play, wait for a little bit later on in the year.
I want to argue with you for a second.
Sure.
I feel like presenting it as Tyler Shuck finished second is a very rosy way to present that. He didn't sniff the award.
But however many players that were rookies played all year and didn't finish in second.
Well, right. But what I'm like, he didn't come close to winning it, though. Like, see, the binary 1-2.
But how much were people talking about that at the back half of the season? I know you remember that. Everybody was making an argument for Shuck.
I mean, I think bettors were. And then I don't know if you remember, we played the clip from Mina Kimes, a voter who mocked people for talking about it. And then he didn't come close. That's like, that to me is, I think, the, you know, it's, again, it's how you look at it, right? We actually just brought this example up the other day. If you look at it in the binary 1-2, yes, he finished second. If you view it in the context of a race, he was nowhere close to beating Tedder McMillan for that award. So that to me is where I quibble with the whole process of like, hey, you know, like Tyler Shuck came on strong and finished second. Yeah, he did, but he finished second almost by default because Mike Vrabel, to your point about the way that they finished out for the for Henderson, wouldn't commit to him. And so then you get this concept where it's like, okay, yes, you're right. Tyler Shuck finished second, but Tedder McMillan was nowhere near giving up that award. And so I wonder again, like, if we're going to be doing the song and dance we do every year where it's like, hey, guys, look out. This guy's coming on pretty strong, and he could win this award. Let's snatch up all these tickets, and then you're going to look, and the dust is going to settle, and 40 first-place votes are going to go to whoever wins this thing, and he's not going to come close.
I mean, my larger point is just that this has typically gone to quarterbacks when they're available. Yeah. In this case, your favorite is still a running back, but I don't see Jeremiah Love. You have no quarterback. You have no offensive line. I still think it's insane for the Cardinals to have drafted him as high as they did, knowing they have no structure for him to play in at this point. But that's neither here nor there. I think Jadarian Price, who is his teammate in Seattle and was drafted at the end of the first round, uh-huh. is a much better angle if you are looking for a running back here. We are both Cam Ward truthers. I don't hate Carnell Tate even as one of those guys at the top of the board. He's going to be a legit number one option for Ward.
Who we're arguing about right now, if Tyler Shuck is everything we talked about, like we talked about yesterday with the Saints, Jordan Tyson's playing in a pretty loaded wide receiver core for the most part, where it might be a lot easier for him to get open. And you're going to maybe put up some pretty good numbers for a team that might win its division.
I just have injury concerns still going back to college for both Shuck and Tyson. So that's not something that I was really looking toward. Mekhi Lemon, I think, is another interesting one, though, with the Eagles, because with A.J. Brown gone, Devonta Smith is going to be getting all those double teams now. So that could open you up as wide receiver, too. Yep. And like, let's say Smith misses a couple games, too. You're going to be that top option. So he's at a double digit price. That's someone I could be interested in. You like Carson Beck, though, if I remember correctly.
I do. But we'll see what happens. I mean, here's the thing. First off, I saw couple of clips.
Let's throw that in, too. Aaron Rodgers, 42.
He was not great. But I just, because I keep just going back to, again, if you're the Cardinals, like, why? Why are we playing this song and dance? Who cares? Like, we don't need to roll out Jacoby Brissett or Gardner Minshew. Just see what, Carson Beck has. And I know he was getting mocked because the other day they were doing, like, a scrimmage in their stadium or whatever it was. And Marvin Harrison Jr. was dropping some balls and Carson Beck was throwing some inaccurate passes. But I still think there's a reality where Beck on a team that is trailing in a ton of games and he gets to start by default, kind of like we're talking about here, is just putting up some ridiculously stupid numbers because he has to throw the ball all the way around.
I said it tongue-in-cheek, but Drew Aller is in the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback room, too. Who knows? By the way, the sports calendar never stops, and the Sharp Plays is covering it all. Our friends over there have been documenting it all, posting logs publicly at sharpplays.com. You can start winning with them today if you head over to sharpplays.com. Again, sharpplays.com.